When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello. Hello, and welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we are qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week, we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs and a whole lot of fun.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London Podcast and on our websites, guideemily.com
and alexlacey.com for information about our upcoming walking tours and virtual tours, as well as what the Blue Badge guiding qualification is all about. Hello there.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm good. How be you?
I'm very well. I don't know why we're doing the voices this week.
I don't know either, but let's go for it. are you well? You okay?
Very well. Yes, very well. I kind of feel like we're drowning at the minute because the rain is intense, but it's all good.
It has been intense, isn't it?
Yeah, it really has. It really has.
But we do have a heat wave come in.
Do
in
we?
A couple of weeks. Yeah, we do. I have checked.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so actually, I think it's not this week, but next week, we're getting like 19, 20 degrees. Oh. Maybe it's a week after. But it's coming, people. It's coming.
Yes. The summer. Amazing. We have to talk about this week, the rather fantastic review that I said. So we got a review. God. On Apple iTunes. I think it was actually from a little while ago, but I've only just seen it, which I sent to Emily in the week, which made me laugh an awful lot because the review said, and if you're still listening, Archipelago Man, thank you very much. He said, this is the history version of Dear Joan and Jerrica. I don't know who they are, but let's go with yay. this is the best bit. He says, I doubt these ladies like each other very much, but it doesn't matter.
So funny. I just like to clarify
you so much.
That he's completely bang on. Can't stand you. But then after that, what did he put? He said He said something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he said, the shade from Emily.
I know. Am I throwing shade at you, Alex?
Maybe. I'm very
I need a definite yes. Maybe I need to push myself.
Yeah, I'm feeling very under attack right now. Yeah, no, the truth is we can't stand each other, which is why we haven't recorded in the same room for a while. Nothing to do with COVID. We just...
No, I mean, that was a blessing in disguise, really. Being next to you.
Awful. Worst nightmare.
But that's so funny. Love that review. Keep these reviews coming in, guys.
Loving it. Absolutely loving it. Well, if you're still listening, Jerrica Man, yeah, you're bang on. Well done.
Bang on the money. Can't stand her.
Hilarious. Anyway, right. Well, this week. Well, actually, what have you been up to? I didn't even ask you. How rude of me.
I'm well. I'm good. Haven't been up to too much. Although somebody called me Goth Guide this week.
Really?
Yes. So,
it's
lovely
sticking.
Lady. Sticking. I took a lady called Jessica. Hi, Jessica. She listens to our podcast. On a live virtual tour of Wapping, and she said, "I know you're the Goth Guide." I mean, to be honest, the tour was about executions and we were going over gravestones and things. So
right up your alley.
But yes, I was like, oh my God, this is actually stuck now, hasn't it?
Brilliant. Just get the website now. Just buy the domain name.
Yeah. I've already ordered some black lipstick from Amazon. So.
Oh, come on. You didn't need to order it at all.
No, I've had it for years.
Oh, jolly good. Mm. Well done, Jessica. Thanks for really, you know,
sticking the crucifix in.
Absolutely, getting the nickname sticking. I love it. Fantastic. So last week we were chatting. Oh my God, what were we chatting about? Okay. Right. So last week we were chatting about Somerset House and Waterloo Bridge.
It was, yeah. And it was very nice, Alex. I learned a lot last week. Thank you.
And the we had our podcast pedestal choices, which were the rather amazing 40 paintings that Monet painted of the bridge while sat in his Savoy Hotel, which I think is rather lovely because you know the bridge was such an important thing. She's grinning at me because she reckons she's stormed it.
Get on with it. The vote has been cast, Alex.
Get on with it. Yes, get on with it. And the other one, which was the rubbish choice, was the women bridge builders, whatever. Which was
the female bridge builders, which I and everybody else seems to think was a fantastic choice.
You don't know. You haven't seen all of the polls. You don't know.
No, I haven't. I've seen two out of the three polls.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, we've had the most votes we've ever had on this one. So, it's kind of a whitewash. But I'm not going to tell you who for. She's celebrating prematurely.
I'm on the log flumes already. My hands are up.
If you were to take a guess about the score, what would you imagine?
Do you know what? I think I've got about 72.
Okay.
Maybe a bit more.
Right.
I mean, that's blooming cocky, isn't it? I mean, sometimes I've just got like 4 points.
It's very cocky. Well, I'm going to tell
you. I think you're close.
Okay.
Maybe like in the 50s.
So I'm going to tell you that the score is 29 to 105.
Oh, wait, for me?
Yes, it is for you.
Oh, my God, 105. Bloody hell, my heart's on fire. Whoa.
105.
105.
I dislike
votes.
All of you intensely.
I didn't even vote
for
myself.
Apart from the 29 people who voted for me, thanks.
Oh, my goodness me. How do you feel about that, Alex? Like, genuinely, you're right.
Got it, mate.
No, it's a shame it's I'm okay. not next to you. I
did
know.
I did think that realistically, it was a good choice. It was and I thought I think I said last week actually. I can't remember now. I think I said, "Are you going to walk this one?"
I don't think you did. I think you were like, "Oh no, Monet. You know, it's all about Monet and his painting."
Yeah, well, of course I'm going to try and fight my corner. Well, maybe I didn't say it, but I think I was secretly resigned to the fact that, to be fair, I would have voted for the Women's Bridge.
You know what this means?
Oh God, what?
That we are neck and neck.
No!
We are.
My
we
lead
are.
Is gone.
16-16. There was a time when I was like six behind you and I have just crept up and I'm standing beside
close,
you on the
though.
Podium. It
it's
is
very
unbelievable.
Close.
It has been very close.
Until this
apart
week.
From the last few weeks, which I think I have just stormed.
Yeah, all right, rub it in.
Sorry, I mean, you know, you've been...
So yes, archipelago man, I really don't like Emily.
Confirmed.
Yep.
Wow, thank you very much to how many is it 105?
105,
I think that's the
mate.
Highest that we've ever got.
Yeah, so I make that I mean I can't quite do the maths on that. Is that 134 votes, which I think the most we've ever had.
Wow, thank you so much everybody.
Yeah, whatever.
We'll move on swiftly, but only because Alex is not into this.
We're even Stevens now, so yeah. Bring
what to play for
fight.
This week.
Bring on the fight. Oh, if you win next week, you're going to be unbearable, aren't you? Absolutely unbearable.
Come on, guys. Keep the votes coming for me.
If anybody else out there would like to join me to host a podcast, I will soon be
really,
in need of a new
I was
podcast
really into
host.
What you were saying then. I was like, oh, what is she going on about here?
Replacing
it. Well, you know, I could also do one as well. We could just do our own separate ones.
Right, well, let's get on with this one then. I guess we better had. Well, this week, what are we chatting about? It is your week, isn't it?
It's my week. So last week, the wheel landed. Do you remember, Alex, where it landed?
No. Yes, oh. I do. yeah, it landed in Soho, which is cool because we've not really been there before.
No, we haven't. And I hope that it lands in Soho again because there is just so much that's gone on there. And I have chosen to talk about a little street which is just outside of Soho, very close to Tottenham Court Road station.
Yep.
And it is called Denmark Street.
Love it.
When I say Denmark Street, Alex, what do you say?
Tin Pan Alley.
Yes, Tin Pan Alley. So it has a musical connotation down there. And if you were to walk down Denmark Street today, which isn't a long street, you know, you could walk from one end to the other in about 2 minutes.
Yeah,
it's really not long.
Yeah, it's quite wee.
But you've got lots of musical shops down there, mainly these days guitar shops. However, it's changing dramatically because you've got the new Crossrail station, which is being created, which means sadly a lot of Denmark Street is starting to dissolve. But it's got such a wonderful, rich musical history. And there are so many musicians and bands I'm going to talk about who really kind of made it in Denmark Street or produced and recorded music.
Which is amazing when it's such a small street. You wouldn't imagine that there'd be quite so much in the way of, you know, stuff that had happened there when it's so small.
Yeah, exactly. I've done a few kind of rock and roll walking tours in time, and you're down Denmark Street for such a long period of time because there's just so much that happened there.
Great.
But let's talk about the area. So the area, which is known as St. Giles, we know that there was a hospital there, which was created in the 12th century, founded by the wife of Henry I, called Maud. And this was a hospital which housed people with leprosy. The hospital grounds was the area that was known as St. Giles. And actually, just at the end of Denmark Street, if you're going east, you'll find St. Giles in the Field, which is a beautiful church.
Yeah, it's where my friend got married.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, and it's where we do the Blue Badge Choir, isn't it, Alex?
It is, yeah. Yeah, we sing at Christmas.
We do. And there's actually been a church on the same site since the Saxon period. The area is where the plague started to attack people in 1665. It's where the first plague victims were buried in the churchyard.
A very ignominious history.
And it's an area that we have actually spoke about on a podcast that we did ages and ages ago, which was the beer flood. Do you remember?
Yeah, I think that was the very first one, actually.
I think it was, yeah, because you were telling us all about the rookery, the area where lots of people were living in horrendous conditions.
Yeah.
So the street itself, we know that it was created after 1682. We don't exactly know when, but there was a map called the Morden and Lees map, which was around 1682, and Denmark Street wasn't there at the time.
Okay.
So we think kind of late 1600s, the street was formed, and you would have seen beautiful houses, about three or four stories high, little townhouses. It's a place where quite a few people lived. You had famous residents such as Johann Johann Zoffany, who was an 18th century society painter. You had Dr. John Purcell, who wrote papers on historic fits.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
I've read them all.
Yeah. And Augustus Sieb, who lived at number 5 Denmark Street, and there's actually a blue plaque there, he invented the diving helmet.
Oh, wow. So the diving bell, I guess.
Well, I guess so, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
The name Denmark Street was named after George of Denmark, who married Princess Anne, who later became Queen Anne in 1702.
Oh, yeah.
And as you were saying, you know, you think of Tin Pan Alley, and there's another blue plaque, it's actually so many blue plaques down there, which does say Tin Pan Alley.
Mm.
And the name Tin Pan Alley, do you know where it comes from?
Ooh, I don't. If I were to guess, I would imagine, I'm kind of thinking percussion and the sort of noise of stuff being banged together to make music, but I'm probably massively off beam there.
No, I mean you're there, you're in the right ballpark. So the noisy,
the other side of the
stand
shouting at you.
Yeah. So it's a term that was first coined in America in an area in New York, which became a very popular place in the late 1800s for music, music in particular being pianos. And some say that the name Tin Pan Alley comes from these pianos that you would hear, and if it wasn't very well in tune, if it wasn't in tune and it was, right, you know, quite a decrepit piano, then it would sound like a tin pan.
Yeah, you get that awful sort of tinny, yeah, that tinny sound, don't you? Yeah.
Some people say that the name Tin Pan Alley also comes from the fact that you'd have these recording studios and the idea of soundproofing hasn't been invented yet. And if you're recording something, you definitely don't want somebody walking past and picking up on this fabulous melody and wonderful song and copying it.
Right.
So they would hire people to stand outside the recording studios to bang on tin pans.
Oh.
In order for the people walking past not to hear these wonderful melodies and tunes that were happening inside.
Hilarious.
Yeah. It's great, isn't it? I love that. I mean, it does make me question, like, I wonder when they were recording, they hear tin pans in the background.
Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, there we go. And before it was known as Tin Pan Alley in Denmark Street, it was actually known as Little Tokyo.
Oh.
And that's because in the 1930s, you had quite a few Japanese visitors who came to London, decided to stay, and they set up shops there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you haven't got Chinatown too far away. That's just up the road. And it's where you had the Tokiwa restaurant and hotel. At number 6, there was this Japanese bookshop that was there for quite a while. But slowly but surely, things start to go towards the musical side of things. And in 1944, one of my favourite songs was recorded in Denmark Street at number 7. This song talks
about... Barbie Girl by Aqua.
Yes! That is one of my faves. But no, this one is all about coconuts.
Oh, hang on.
1944.
It's not,
come on, you've got it.
Yeah, it's in my brain, isn't it?
Do you want me to sing it?
Yeah, please.
I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts.
Diddle-dee-dee.
Here they are standing in a row. Big ones, small ones, some as big as your head.
Why does that not surprise me that that's one of your favourites?
Oh,
songs?
I love it. It reminds me of my nan.
You're such an East End Barrow boy, aren't you?
Oh, like my nan and granddad, they love the old songs. And at parties, they'd always sing this one. And my nan would get up and be like, flick of the wrist. So that was recorded by Box and Cox. That's Harold Box and Desmond Cox.
Right. Harold and Des, classic pop duo.
Yeah, and it's such a well-known tune as well. Bits of it are sung in The Lion King by Rowan Atkinson. It was it was sung by Ringo Starr in the Magical Mystery Tour. It's sung by Nicolas Cage in National Treasure in the movie.
And he's trying to do a bad English accent, isn't he?
Yeah, right. So, you know, think about that next time that it was recorded in Denmark Street.
Was it originally a sort of like a local song, or did they write it and record it and then it became a big thing?
I don't think they thought that it was going to be as big as it got. Right. And I don't think it really got big until about the 1960s.
Okay.
But yeah, there you go. Box and Cox.
Box and Cox. Added to the watch list.
Yeah. Now, in 1911, so a little bit before that, you had Lawrence Wright, who was a big music publisher. He set up a shop in Denmark Street and eventually created a music magazine, very well known, called The Melody Maker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, have you heard of that?
Absolutely, yeah. Very famous magazine.
So that was set up in 1926. So he had his shop for about 15 years, was publishing music, and then started doing this magazine. Initially, they concentrated on jazz, but they had competition from the NME, which I'm going to talk about very soon, who set up shop about 10 years before on the same road.
Okay.
Set up shop after on the same road. So there was a bit of competition between them. And the NME was, you know, talking and writing about all sorts of performers. So the Melody Maker thought, okay, we're going to have to go a bit more mainstream.
Right.
And They actually, in 1965, they wrote an article about the Beatles and suggested that the Beatles, John Paul, George and Ringo should all have an honour. They should all be made members of the Order of the British Empire. Mm-hmm. And because of that article, that's what happened.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But I think John Lennon refused his or gave his back, didn't he?
Oh, I don't know. Did he?
Yeah, I think he did.
Oh, it's a bit rude, isn't it?
Well, he's a pacifist, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
And,
yeah. You
know, he's not really a monarchist, so...
No, so the other three were like, yeah, let's go for it.
I think I'll double-check that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's also said that the Melody Maker made David Bowie.
Ah, well, thank you, Melody Maker.
Yeah, exactly. And David Bowie said this as well. He said, yeah, it was Melody Maker that made me. It was that piece by Mick Watts. And Mick Watts basically put this interview up in the Melody Maker of this conversation that he had with David Bowie. And in it, David Bowie says, I'm gay and always have been, even when I was David Jones, his former name. Mm. And people read it and thought, wow, who's this man? Like, you know, obviously in the 1960s as well, who's being so wonderfully honest, and people just, you know, just attach themselves to him.
Wow.
So, yeah. Now, eventually, the Melody Maker stopped in the year 2000. So it went for quite some time and merged with the NME. And basically gave the NME all their contacts. So the NME is just a place, a hub, where you've got years and years of archives about all these different musicians and different things that they've recorded and done.
And then the NME stopped as well, didn't it, in print. It's come back. I think it was out for about 2 years and it's back now.
Yes,
but only in digital. So it used to be in print, and that stopped a couple of years ago.
Yeah, purely digital now. But they were founded in 1952, and they initially started kind of looking at punk rock. But then eventually they'd have people like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones on their front covers. It's said that they gave the Sex Pistols their first music press coverage.
Oh, wow.
And they kind of talked about this performance that the Sex Pistols did in the Marquee Club, which is just over the road. Today, the Marquee Club is a Wetherspoons pub.
Of course it is.
Which I've been into quite a few times. And actually, it's very cool. I can't remember what it's called, what the Wetherspoons pub is called.
Let me look it up.
Yeah, have a little look. Because when you go in, there's lots of memorabilia. There's signed guitars on the wall, and there's different posters related to different people that performed there. And you go up onto the stage to get to the back of the building, to get to the other bar at the back. So it's probably one of the coolest Wetherspoon pubs in London, I would say, actually.
Which, you know, yeah. They do have some good buildings, don't they?
They do, yeah. And the Marquee Club was a few places in Soho, but the one that's now Wetherspoons Pub was the last one.
Is it the Montague Pike?
That's it, the Montague Pike. Oh, time spent in the Montague Pike. Yes, yes, that's the one. So if you want to go there, it's on Charing Cross Road, very close to, what's that big theatre? The Palace Theatre, yeah. Very close to the Palace Theatre. So, yeah, I mean, the NME, they've kind of featured so many different artists. I kind of, I associate them with their indie music, mm-hmm. Like Franz Ferdinand, Block Party, Kaiser Chiefs, that kind of thing, as I know that that was quite popular during the time that I was aware of it. Mm. And in the end, they decided to become free. So a free magazine that they were given to people in 2015, they obviously thought that they could make enough money through the advertisement.
Yeah.
But now, you know, hardly anybody purchases magazines, unfortunately, or at least not as much as they did, say, 20 years ago. So yeah. Now, as you said, it's become purely digital.
Yeah. Which is a shame because, you know, there's a big history with things like the NME and Melody Maker and, my God, the other ones, isn't there, that Kerrang and all sorts. And I don't think there's many, if any, of them going anymore, at least not in printed version.
No. Well, I guess the amount of money that it costs to print, they could still get the money from the advertisers to do it online. I guess yeah. It makes sense, doesn't it?
It does make sense. It does make sense. I just used to remember buying The Enemy when I was younger, and I used to love it.
Did you? Yeah. Like, what kind of bands were you into?
Oh, well, oh my goodness. My friend Becky and I, when we were at school, we used to love Prodigy.
So, that's okay. Firestarter, Twisted Firestarter.
We were very eclectic. We liked Cooler Shaker. We liked Stereophonic. We liked all sorts of stuff. And we wouldn't always buy The Enemy, but occasionally we would, and we'd sort of share it. And
Yeah, fabulous. Now, I did mention the Sex Pistols. So if you go down Denmark Street and you're walking east, on the right-hand side, you've got number 6. And it is where Malcolm McLaren, who was the manager of the Sex Pistols, and actually he had so many strings to his bow. He was a performer, he was a visual artist. He owned, along with his wife Vivian Westwood, the Chelsea boutique shop called Sex.
Oh, Sex.
Sex. Would you like to come to Sex? So he was the manager of a few bands. There was one band called Bad Finger, who he was managing when he actually purchased the room above number 6 Denmark Street and turned it into a rehearsal room for the band.
Oh, right.
And then eventually he signed the Sex Pistols. And I remember, I don't think it's still there, but you'd walk past number 6 and you'd look up at the top and you'd see this little figure of the Queen, and it's one of those little things that, you know, tick 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 moves,
yeah,
as the sun, you know, hits it. It's like powered by the sun, isn't it?
Yeah, the sort of the waving queen
yeah. thing,
yeah.
And instantly you're reminded of God Save the Queen, which was a song that came out by the Sex Pistols, and it came out during the Queen's Silver Jubilee in 1977. And it was the first time that a number one song, a number one hit, which was God Save the Queen, was not announced. So The charts went up to number 2, and on, you know, BBC, on Top of the Pops and all that kind of thing, they refused to mention what number 1 was because it was such a scandal.
And it was very anti-monarchist. Hilarious.
It was very anti-monarchist. And actually, just a couple of days before, there was going to be this huge procession along the River Thames where the Queen was going to be there. You know, there was going to be a big dedication to her Silver Jubilee. 2 days before, so June 7th, the Sex Pistols and Malcolm McLaren, lots of different kind of photographers and artists, they all got on a boat and basically kind of mocked the fact that there was going to be this royal river party in a couple of days. So you had people like Sid Vicious and Johnny Rotten, who was just getting completely obliteratedly drunk, sailing past the Houses of Parliament.
Amazing.
And, you know, putting their fingers up to the monarchy. And in the end, the police stopped them. And Malcolm McLaren, who I think had a little bit too much to drink, a few too many sherbets, basically said a few words I can't say, and was arrested. Yeah.
I mean, like, in fairness, that I not, don't expect anything different from that lot. Hilarious.
No. And a few years ago, they found, when they were refurbishing the room where they not only recorded music but also slept occasionally as well, that there were these little caricatures of the band. So you'd see kind of Sid Vicious and Johnny Rotten and Paul Cook and everything. Yeah, really cool. I don't know if they're still there.
Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you?
You'd hope so. You'd hope that they'd be preserved and not covered over. Even if you were, you know, a shop that was taking over the building and you knew about the history.
That's music history right there, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Now, if you're on the same side as number 6 and you go all the way down to the bottom, so literally just before you kind of hit St Giles Church, you've got Regent Sound Studios, which today is a music shop. Mm-hmm. So you can go in there and you can purchase your ukulele, your guitars. But originally it was created as a recording studio, 1948. And it's very well known as the place where the Rolling Stones recorded their debut album,
yeah.
Their first EP, the majority of their second album as well. Keith Richards from the Stones. He said, we did our early records on a two-track Revo in a room, which was insulated with egg cartons at Regent Sounds.
You've heard that. I've heard that before, that things are, it's really good for, you know, for sound dampening, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knew? Because I guess in terms of soundproofing, the first kind of thing that they did that was permanent was cork, where they put cork in between the walls. Yeah. And it's got that same kind of consistency, I guess, isn't it? If you think about an egg box.
I guess so. And I don't know if it's with the egg cartons, it's something to do with the shape of them as well. I don't know, but...
Yeah, because it holds the sound in the little kind of the void.
Possibly, I don't know. This is science. I'm not good at science.
But they were kind of like, you know, they were quite young at the time. It was their first recording studio and they thought, oh, this is not what we were expecting. Suddenly saw all these like egg boxes attached to the wall. And it was independent, which meant that Regent Sound Studios, it wasn't overly expensive to record your music there. They wanted to kind of keep it quite affordable for upstarting bands. And the Rolling Stones, they recorded, ended up going there quite a few times to record music or record their demos and things. And I think that they had a deal where they didn't actually pay because they were getting so big that, you know, if it came out that the Rolling Stones were at Regent Sound Studios, that would bring in quite a few clients.
Yeah.
And it did. I mean, you had
probably
people...
quite a lot of fans hanging outside as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, can you imagine, like... You'd have lots of people.
Tiny
like,
street as well. Like.
Yeah, women in miniskirts with hoping to get, you know, a signature from one of the Stones. Or people like the band The Who, Elton John recorded there, Black Sabbath, the Bee Gees, just a whole host of people.
It's amazing to think that now, because when you wander around Soho, it's, you know, it's very busy and there's people everywhere. And you can't really imagine that some of the largest groups, musical groups of the era, would just randomly stroll around there. But I guess they would.
You would have seen them all the time. All the time. And, there's a club that I'm going to talk about soon where you would just see all these prolific artists going in and out constantly.
Yeah.
You know, it was absolutely the place to be, especially because it's spilled over from Soho, where you've already got lots going on in the way of music. And actually, Regent Sound Studios, it had to be extended. So they created another studio, not in the same building, but a little bit further around to where Tottenham Court Station is today.
Yep.
And it's where Paul McCartney recorded a song called Fixing a Hole. If you're aware of that one.
I don't know that one though.
I think that says quite a lot. I don't know it either. Fixing a Hole. And this was due to the fact that Abbey Road, which is where the Beatles always recorded their music, it was all booked out. And it was one of the first times actually that they recorded somewhere else.
Yeah, and I've heard that when it was getting booked out like that, he eventually created a replica of the Abbey Road studio in the basement of MPL Records, which is his recording studio or recording company, which is on Soho Square.
Apparently
there now is a replica in the basement if he needs to record and can't get into Abbey Road for whatever reason.
Oh, there you go. Paul McCartney doing pretty well.
Got cash, hasn't he?
So it was Regent Sound Studios up until the 1980s. The last ever band to use it and record there was Bananarama.
Hey!
Bananarama. So after Bananarama, it was turned into a bookshop, which was called Helter Skelter. And this was a bookshop, of course, all about music, musicians and different things related to that subject. And now it's called Regent Sounds. It's a shop where, as I say, you can go in and purchase your musical instruments.
Hurrah!
Now, clubs, bars. One club down there was called the Gioconda Club. Have you heard of this?
I've not, no.
So it's where it's believed that David Bowie met the real-life Ziggy Stardust.
Oh! Tell me more.
Yeah, so Ziggy Stardust apparently was a man called Vince Taylor. Vince Taylor was a musician. He was a lead singer of a band called Vince Taylor and his Playboys. apparently he was very good. He was very good. But he was obsessed with outer space and aliens. And it's believed that he would be in there drinking and he would try to get people to look at a map where he could point out UFO sightings. And there was one occasion when he was kind of on the floor. He had this map out and trying to get people's attention. And people were just laughing at him. People would kind of see him as a bit of a joke. Some people would kind of like throw their drinks at him because they would just think that he was, you know, talking nonsense. And David Bowie walked in at one time and saw all this and said, "Hey, Vince, you know, show me your UFO sightings." Awesome. And Vince Taylor was just like, "Oh my gosh!" Like,
and I guess David Bowie was famous by this point as well.
He was, yeah. And he really got on well with this man called Vince Taylor, who was clearly suffering from something mentally. And he suffered a lot from drug abuse. And in the end, he got taken to an asylum. And his music career obviously stopped. So Ziggy Stardust is all about the rise and fall, of this particular man.
That makes sense.
Who, you know, is so attached to space and aliens. And yeah, it's just a lovely thought that, you know, you can see it like if there's bullying happening at school or something and David Bowie walks in, he's like, "Hey, Vince, show me your UFO sightings.
You're my new best mate." And I'm going to
Yeah, and because it's David Bowie, everyone's like, "Oh my God, yeah, actually, Vince Taylor is a pretty cool guy."
Wow.
Yeah, and I just love that.
I kind of like then that he's, you know, immortalised in Ziggy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was eventually turned into a coffee bar, which is called Barino. And then in 2008, it was called the Gioconda Dining Room, where you could go in and you could sit down and have a nice meal. And then eventually it was called La Gioconda, but it closed in 2014.
Right.
I don't know what it is now. I have to say, I haven't walked down Denmark Street for a little while. Might have to have another little look down there.
Rummage.
But
yeah,
as I say, because of the Crossrail, you've got a lot of it that is just starting to close now.
It's a real shame.
Yeah, it is.
And I know there's been a concerted effort to keep Denmark Street for quite a while. I think it's been, people have been sort of campaigning to keep it and all that kind of thing, but
yeah
tricky.
Yeah, definitely. Somebody who worked down there was a man called Lionel Bart. Have you heard of Lionel Bart?
Oh, yes, I have. Now, why have I heard of Lionel Bart? I should know. Enlighten me.
Are you a fan of Oliver?
There we go. Yes, I know. Yeah, I know exactly who Lionel Bart is now. Yes, I am. Yeah.
So he created the musical Oliver. Well, he, you know, he wrote the book and did everything to do with Oliver. And he was known
You say wrote the book, you don't mean the actual original book. You mean the script.
The script, sorry, the actual script. He wrote the script.
I can tell you who wrote the book.
Yeah, sorry. The script. So he was known as the King of Denmark Street. He was a British writer, a composer. He worked alongside the director, Joan Littlewood, at such a beautiful theatre, which is the Theatre Royal in Stratford East. Andrew Lloyd Webber, who was the creator, he's still alive. Yeah, that's right, is the creator.
created, thank you, of
The Phantom of the Opera and various other musicals. He said that Lionel Bart was the father of the modern British musical.
The songs in Oliver are iconic, aren't they?
They are. Is this what we're waiting for? Can we live to 84? I just love it.
Oh, I was tempted to join in, but I was enjoying that far too much.
Is it 84? Might even be 24.
I think so. I don't know. What? I can't remember.
Doing very well if you can live to 84.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the other different kind of songs that he wrote was the theme song, which was from Russia with Love, James Bond.
Yeah, I think I'd read that about him at some point.
Living Doll by Cliff Richard.
Really?
Yeah. Far Away by Shirley Bassey.
Gosh.
So the King of Denmark Street.
Yeah, really.
And another club which is on the left-hand side of the road, or was on the left-hand side of the road, number 12 if you're going east, number 26 is the 12 Bar Club. The building was very old. I mean, it has changed here and there, and there was a big fire. It was actually an arson attack in the late 1900s, which changed so many of the original features inside, because it was a stable. It was used as stables and was part of the hospitals from 1635. Eventually, it was turned into a blacksmith's. Okay. And there was this big fireplace that later on, when you went in there to see performances, the fireplace was still there. And it's where musicians kind of kept their instruments whilst they were playing.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's quite cool.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? But before that, it was actually a comic shop, which was called Paradise Alley, which lived opposite the Forbidden Planet shop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so the Forbidden Planet shop now is not too far. It's just around the corner, kind of going towards the British Museum.
It's very close to Covent Garden, isn't it?
Yeah, very close. So
it's
you had
Shaftesbury.
Yeah, so you had Paradise Alley and Forbidden Planet kind of going head to head with each other. And that was a bit of a theme, actually, as I mentioned, where you had the Enemy and the Melody Maker. You had these studios that were going against each other. But it was all friendly. It was friendly competition. Before it was called the 12 Bar Club, it was called the Forge Folk and Blues Club.
That's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah. And it was originally a social club, which was for staff members that basically worked on Denmark Street.
Right.
So I think that would have been quite cool, because, you know, you probably would have wanted to go in there and hang out with all these cool people, but you could only do so if you worked along Denmark Street.
Yeah. Gosh.
And then in 1994, so it turned into the 12 Bar Club. This was created by a man called Phil Ryan, who was an English musician, or I should say is an English musician. I keep killing these people off.
Yeah, don't kill them off until
they're dying. No. He is very well known because he toured with the Animals and also is the co-founder of The Big Issue.
Oh, yes, I thought that. I was thinking that when you said his name. I thought, is that the same guy?
Yeah, yeah. He goes into places like London Business School and kind of talks about how, you know, how he set up The Big Issue, how to set up a company.
Fascinating.
Yeah, so he was the one that kind of got the 12 Bar going and actually won quite a few awards. One in 2005, which was the Time Out Best Music Venue Award.
Yep.
And in 2012, the Telegraph ranked the 12 Bar as the second best venue in the world.
Wow, that's a bit of an accolade.
Isn't it? Did you ever go in there?
No.
So I went in there once and I felt really out of place. Everyone was so cool.
Achingly cool, yeah. I think that's the kind of place I would never have stepped foot. I'm nowhere near cool enough for that.
Oh my God. I was like early 20s and I just felt, I don't know, there's a particular buzz in there, you know. It's like a two-level place with a balcony. No more, unfortunately, but it had a balcony so you could sit or stand and watch the performances. And you would have, especially around the time when I was going, a lot of people that would perform there that were just starting their music careers. Mm-hmm. So people that you didn't really know. But you would also have these kind of secret events where suddenly you'd hear that Adele had played there, or you'd have kind of like a mainstream performers such as Damien Rice, the Libertines, Keane, Jeff Buckley.
You'd only find out about them after it happened, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so like if you were there to watch, I don't know, a couple of musicians that you didn't know and you decided to stay, then you might suddenly, you know, see somebody that you wasn't expecting to play.
Wow.
And this place was such an institution that when it all came out that because of the Crossrail and the area, you know, they're wanting to kind of, I guess, gentrify the area and change the way that it looks, there was a petition and 17,000 people signed this petition to stop them changing the street and getting rid of some of the buildings. Unfortunately, this didn't help. And you even had Pete Townsend from The Who, who wrote in the papers at the time. He said, in the 60s, I bought fuzz boxes and strings for my guitars from Macri's guitar shop in Denmark Street. The Who did a back-in vocal rehearsal with Shel Tammy in Denmark Street at Regent Sound, and I used to shop at the drum store when living in nearby Wardour Street. Boris Johnson, who was the mayor at the time, and Camden Council, please make Denmark Street a heritage zone. Yeah. Otherwise, a massive chunk of rock music history will be lost forever. But unfortunately, this was in vain, because
I think that's going to be the sort of thing that is regretted in future years, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they have now turned what is left into a heritage site. You know, you've got quite a few blue plaques up there now. I think there are 8 listed buildings which absolutely cannot be tampered with.
So how much of it was torn down? Because I have to say, I haven't been up there for a little while.
So it's more kind of the bits at the back, like the kind of the little studios at the back of Denmark Street.
Right.
And if you're going down on the left-hand side, just past where the 12 Bar Club would have been, some of the buildings have come down there.
Right.
And you'll see these days, I mean, there's just scaffolding. You've got people in hard hats. That whole area is just a big construction zone.
Yeah.
Apart from when you first go down the street, if you're coming away from Soho and you do see these guitar shops and music shops that are still there, but a lot of it is just starting to look really sad.
Yeah, it is starting to look a bit sad, which is a real shame.
Yeah.
I have to say, because I think just before lockdown, I bought a ukulele book from one of the shops on Denmark Street, and I got a little thrill from doing that. I was kind of like, I'm, you know, I'm part of rock history now, obviously.
Yeah, yeah,
famous ukulele
exactly.
player that I am. And it was rather lovely. It was I specifically went to Denmark Street to buy something.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Hmm. Now, lastly, a little thing about Elton John. So he used to work at Mills Music as a 17-year-old. When he was Reg Dwight at the time. And he worked in there, and he would basically, I think he'd get like £3.50 a week, and he would make tea for everybody in there.
Oh.
And like have a little tinkle on the piano when no one was looking.
What a sweetie.
Really sweet. And just on top of a kind of another office, it was like an office that was run by a man called Dick James. It was Dick James' music label. And a man called Bernie Taupin. Do you know Bernie Taupin?
Yes, absolutely, I do.
Yep. So who was the writer for Elton John's music, or yeah, most of his music. He was sat on top of this particular office. He was waiting for Elton John. And this is where he started to come up with the lyrics, Kicked Off the Moss. Do you know that one?
Yeah.
So how does that one start?
I sat on the roof.
That's it. I kicked off the moss. One of those things, they've got me quite lost. Or like something like that. Yeah, basically your
I'm
song,
not very good at
Elton
lyrics.
John. But yeah, it's where he first kind of started writing that, and where that song was born.
Gosh, that's quite an amazing bit of rock history, isn't it?
Yeah. And Denmark Street is mentioned in an Elton song called Bitter Fingers.
They talk about
Denmark Street. So, yeah, there you go. As I say, down there you've got quite a few blue plaques. Some of the buildings are not going to be torn down and will remain as they are. Regent Sound is still going. Although it's a music shop, it is still going. I think that's one of the protected venues, actually. So have a little walk down and maybe look above number 6. Look on the first floor or second floor of number 6 and see if you can see that little image of the Queen shaking and waving her hand.
Oh, fantastic. I'll definitely have a look for that next time I'm down there. I might have to have a little rummage in the next few weeks when my knee gets better.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Em.
You're welcome.
What a great bit of rock history. I mean, it's amazing how much is packed into that really quite short street.
Hmm.
And of course, the rock history spills out into Soho and it's all over the place. And we probably could have talked for hours if we'd have done the whole thing. But what a fantastic place to go and have it. Because it kind of feels like a little bit of a secret now, because it is so sort of, it's a little bit out of the way, and it is a little bit, like you say, looking a little bit sad and tired, and it's not quite as busy and thronging as it probably once was. So it does feel like a little bit of a secret history spot, but perfect for a podcast.
Yes.
Thanks so much.
No worries.
Podcast Pedestal.
So Podcast Pedestal.
Podcast Pedestal, right.
Yeah. I know exactly what I'm going to do.
Do you?
Yeah, the minute you said it, I was like, that's mine. If you're happy for me to. Okay. Oh, no, I freaked you out.
You have freaked me out because I think we're probably going to go for the same thing.
No. Okay. Who's going first?
Let's say it together.
Okay.
1, 2, 3.
Ziggy.
Vince Taylor.
Is that yes. Ziggy, right? Oh, no.
Oh, damn it. I'm gonna let you have it.
I think neither of us should have it.
No, I'm gonna let you have it.
You sure?
I am gonna let you have it.
Okay.
I think for me it's gonna be the little the Queen in the Window.
Queen in the Window. All right.
Yeah. I think the connections to the Sex Pistols and the rebels that they were and how much anarchy I'm sure that they created down Denmark Street. I think I'm going to go for the little queen. I don't know what they're called, though.
I don't know. Solar panel queen? Waving queen toy thing?
Waving queen toy.
Yeah, waving queen.
God save the queen.
Waving queen in the window.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a terrible one?
No.
Sometimes you give me a good reaction. You haven't given me a good reaction.
Well, that's because I'm feeling a little bit mean about having Vince Taylor.
I mean, you should.
No, I don't think I think none of us should have. I think if we can't share, then none of us should have it.
It's up to you. I'm going to let you have it if you want it.
I think that would be unfair. So let's neither of us have it.
Okay.
You go for the Waving Queen and I am going to go for let's think. I actually quite like the Bernie Taupin sitting and waiting for Elton John. I quite like that.
That's a nice one. That's good. Okay.
Yeah.
So do you want him, the fact that he's waiting for Elton John?
Well, the inspiration for him waiting for him is the inspiration for the lyrics.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we kind of phrase that.
Taupin writing your song? I don't know. Taupin kicking off the moss?
Yeah, something like that. Something along those lines. Whatever we can fit into the poll. Hi, Nick. whatever we can fit into the poll, I'm happy for.
Okay.
Yeah. Something Brilliant. Along those lines. Yeah, I think that's it. Because I don't think it would be fair if one or other of us had... I mean, realistically, that is the big... That's the headline,
That is the biggie. That is the biggie. Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate that, Alex. Thank you very much.
You know. There we go. So those are your options. So it is Bernie Taupin kicking off the moss and waiting for Elton John and getting inspired to write your song, and yours is
the Queen, the toy waving in the window, reminding us that that's where the Sex Pistols lived and recorded music, and of course were absolute anarchists.
I know, I love it. I kind of like that idea of walking along and pointing that the Queen out to people. I'm going to do that and not credit you.
Not surprised at all. Yeah.
The Wheel of Destiny.
So, let's go to the Wheel of Destiny.
Super exciting. You're Where clapping do you your hands it? Together.
I'm so, so excited. I'm applauding the wheel. What would you like to go for?
Is there anywhere that we've got on the wheel that we haven't been yet? I'm trying to think. I'm up for something.
Have we done Bloomsbury?
Maybe not. Maybe not for... Maybe we did once.
Oh, I don't think we've been to King's Cross.
Oh, no, we haven't been up there.
King's Cross is on the wheel.
Yeah, we haven't been up there yet. Well, let's just give it a spin, see whether the chips fall where they may.
I think we've been to most places. Okay, right, you ready?
Go for it.
Okay, off we go. I think we've had this once. Whitechapel.
Oh, yay, cool. All right, Whitechapel. Let me have a look at my little list. Oh, I tell you what. Yeah, I know exactly what I want to do here. I would like to look at the Whitechapel Bell Foundry.
Oh, good one.
Yeah, I like the Bell Foundry. And it's going through lots of changes at the minute. So, I think that's what we're going to look at. Whitechapel Bell Foundry.
Fantastic.
It's a little gem.
Okay, well, look forward to that. Ding to the dong.
Ding to, absolutely, ding to the dong. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for coming and listening. Thank you, Em, for a fantastic chat about
music. No problem.
And we'll see you next week for more Ladies Who London. Please go and rate, subscribe, like the podcast, all of those things. And don't forget the polls for Podcast Pedestal go up on a Sunday on Instagram. And you can message us or whatever you want with your vote as well. So there we go.
Perfect. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, Alex.
Have a great week.
Take care. Bye.